Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hi there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, now it's all right, it's okay, and you may look the other way. We can try to understand the New York Times effect on man. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
Why are there so many lolcats on the internet?
I don't know. Why are there so many lolcats?
Lauren, you do social media. You do the stuff.
Where do all the lolcats come from?
Who's
making them?
Well, Joe, when an internet and an internet user love each other very much...
lolcats happen?
Lolcats happen.
Apparently
lol
so. So
whole litters of them.
Yeah, but then we're using lolcats as an example of... something that that many people refer to as a meme. It's a kind of a very basic idea, a germ of an idea that can evolve and transform over time. It gets spread around, kind of like a really bad flu.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, it's also very similar to the concept of going viral. To continue with the illness theme, but
yeah.
The idea of things spreading across the internet. This is one example of something that we wanted to talk about today called emergence.
Yeah, so if you look at an individual meme like a lolcat is part of what we might call a memeplex,
mm-hmm.
which is a complex system that displays what we would term emergent behavior.
Okay, so what exactly is emergent behavior?
Emergent behavior is a really interesting way of describing how complexity arises in systems.
Okay.
Okay, so think about it like this. Imagine a flock of birds.
Mm-hmm.
You've probably seen birds flocking before, like when they go into a big spiral, you know, and
sure.
they're all moving and you see the cloud of birds undulating in the sky.
So we're talking about like a flock of sparrows as opposed to like the V formation of geese.
Right.
All right.
How does that flock of birds decide how to move?
That's an excellent question. Obviously, they have a foreman, right?
Right. You'd seem to think, well, maybe there's like one bird that moves first and the other birds follow that bird.
The general bird, yeah.
Yeah. The birds don't have a leader. The way we would describe how these birds flock and create these beautiful, complex patterns is the concept of emergence. And what that means is that it's a complex pattern that's unpredictable, that's created by individual agents following local rules. So the way birds create a flocking pattern like that is that each one individually has no idea that it's flocking,
mm-hmm.
and it has no idea of how to create a flock. It just knows that, well, when the bird flying next to me gets X number of inches close, I move in the other direction. And I follow the bird in front of me and say if there is a predator approaching or some other stimulus, we shift in this direction.
Right.
And surprisingly enough, if you just get enough individuals acting on those rules, these crazy patterns emerge.
Right. So the same sort of thing is true in schools of fish.
Exactly.
Where you'll see an enormous school of fish all moving as if it's one body.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that there is, just like with the birds, there's not a leader fish that every other fish is taking its cues off of. It's all behaving this if you were to boil it way down, if you were able to strip away the complexity, you would see that there are these basic rules that underlie the system. It's just that when you get all those different individuals together and you have the actual environment playing a part, those usually fairly simple rules lead to this huge amount of complexity.
Mm-hmm. The other thing about how emergent systems behave is that one tends to say that they're greater than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what that means, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. like how I just affirmed, yeah.
Doctor?
Yeah, they're greater than the sum of their parts. So what that means is that if you have a bunch of birds,
mm-hmm.
they're not following rules just like every bird move forward 6 inches. That would not be an emergent system. That would be a totally predictable system.
Sure.
And
right. We could graph that.
Right. And the movement of the birds would be something that we could understand as simple addition of all of the steps.
Right. If this, then that.
Right. But the way birds actually flock is they interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this creates massively unpredictable patterns unless you have like a very powerful computer model that is simulating each individual bird.
Right. And we can see this not just in organic behavior. It comes up in all sorts of systems that have layers of complexity to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you might even say, how about a termite mound or an anthill?
Mm-hmm.
The mound itself is not living, but the mound is an example of emergence because no single termite knows how to create a mound. There's no leader termite telling the other termites what to do. They're all just following a rule like put a piece of dirt where something is wet or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
Sure.
And then you end up with these 8-foot tall monstrosities that look like something from a sci-fi film.
Right.
And you look at that and you think, man, that looks like it was built by somebody. You know, it has this illusion of design.
Humans can flock the same way. If you've ever been in a large crowd of people on a sidewalk and haven't, you know, run smack into anyone unless you were looking at your smartphone, it's the same kind of behavior. And that is not the only way that humans use emergence, as it turns out. What's all this stuff about thought processes being?
Well, there are actually some, and this is controversial, right? We don't know this, but there are plenty of people who are consciousness theorists who think that the very idea of human consciousness is an emergent property of the brain, meaning that so the brain is constructed of neurons.
Right.
It has lots of little neurons, and no single neuron knows how to create a brain. What it is that each one is following extremely simple local rules, but with enough interconnection and
enough
feedback,
stimuli, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. feedback and interactivity, they create this phenomenon that we would think of as a mind or consciousness.
Interesting. So even emergent behavior on an individual basis, showing again that systems are – when we talk about systems, we're not just talking about a collection of people or animals. We could be talking about a system as in – and just a single person.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny to think about how there are levels of this, right? So within a cell, there is emergent behavior, right? Because it's individual proteins following simple rules of chemistry that interact together to form this mass pattern known as a cell.
Right.
And then you group all those cells together, and if you buy into the emergence theory of consciousness, they can, in a brain, make consciousness. And then you get enough people with consciousness together acting individually to follow local rules, and they can create mass patterns. Like, one example I found that's interesting is the idea of mosh pits as emergent behavior.
Huh. Okay, yeah.
You know, nobody's controlling the mosh pit. There are just simple rules like...
Oh. You're not kidding.
How many mosh pits you been in this week?
Hey, buddy. I went to college in the 90s.
Okay.
I was there.
You were moshing?
I was trying to get out of the pit.
Oh, I see. You're the wimp.
I'm the guy who appreciated it when I didn't have an elbow thrust into my temple.
Okay.
So, that's okay. Fair. That's a fair point, I think.
But I'm also a guy who loves punk rock.
You did have headbanger hair, didn't you?
I did back then.
Yeah.
Yeah. First of all, I had hair. And second of all, it was headbanger hair. This is true.
Is headbanger hair an emergent behavior?
Oh,
I think it might be a meme, actually.
I can tell you this, it's not emerging anymore. that ship has sailed. But okay. getting back to the actual discussion here.
But so you might be wondering, how does this tie into what we were talking about, which was social media?
And part of that was the discussion about how is social media affecting us as a society? How is it affecting us on an individual basis? Is it actually rewiring us? If you've listened to our previous podcast, you heard us talk all about that theory or that hypothesis, I really should say, and that and the disagreement that exists around that, or at least around the rigorous scientific evidence that doesn't seem to be there for either side at the moment. We wanted to talk more about, well, it may be that all of that, all of those concerns are ultimately moot. For one thing, this is the world we live in now, right? I mean, that's... It's not like I don't expect us to turn back from here.
Right. We're never going to put down Facebook and say, yeah, well, I think we're bored of this now. More of that.
Well, I mean, it's possible, but.
I think something else would come along to fill that void or to make a new you know, something that we can't even think of right now, but it would be the new thing that would...
Of interconnectivity.
Yeah.
It'd be like if they decided to take away television in the 1960s.
I mean, yeah.
It's just, yeah.
So it's cats out of the bag.
Right. So in one sense, the whole discussion about emergence is really about how it's very possible that the way that we use social media and social networking sites and the way that it plays a role in our lives... that we've only scratched the surface.
No, I was going to say that the concept of the meme goes back to 1976, before social media sites existed. A fellow named Richard Dawkins wrote a book called The Selfish Gene, and this was an entire concept that was linking the evolution of culture and pop culture specifically to natural selection in biology. Mm-hmm. So it was saying that the way that genes are selected and processed over the course of evolution is the same way that ideas are selected within culture.
Right, because ideas, just like genes, are self-replicating and they can change, right? Like an idea makes a copy of itself when you share it with somebody else.
But it can also mutate due to either misunderstanding or the person who receives that idea gene changes it in some way before they pass it on.
Yeah, so in a weird way, ideas follow the same mechanics as our genes do. And so when you get enough ideas churning about in a complex system, you might generate something that's known as a memeplex.
Gotcha.
Right? That it's all these memes interacting. It's kind of like a gene pool.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you know? That idea has been taken to a slightly narrow, I mean, you could say everything on the internet is a meme because it's full of ideas. But on the internet, a meme has come to mean something a little more specific. It's a visual or aesthetic or literary.
A shareable note of some kind. Usually a pretty small unit of information. I would say colloquial speaking that when we say meme, we mean, you know,
Well, I mean, okay, it's a trend.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a trend, and it's a small amount of information. The format of that small amount of information doesn't matter. It could be a video. It could be an image. It could be text. Yeah, on Twitter, for example, I would argue that hashtags are really just a meme enabler, right? There are people who will come up with some sort of clever joke or some, maybe it's not even a joke, it might be something very serious, and they do a hashtag to kind of separate that out from other from the noise, if you will, of Twitter, and other people may or may not pick up on it. And if they do pick up on it, then it really becomes a meme where other people are taking that, adding to it, changing it, transforming it in some way, and passing it on into a greater network of folks.
Yeah, cool story, bro. So
wow.
If you just take cats, for example, probably the internet's favorite meme, right?
They're big. They're big. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear they're big.
Yeah.
Cats on the internet. What is the cat memeplex? Who's controlling it?
Cheeseburger.
It's probably cheeseburgers, yes.
Yeah.
There is no one in charge
of
the cat memeplex. I mean, or that's memeplex probably isn't the right word there, but the overall.
But there's a living, breathing organism of, kind
it's
of.
It's called a cat.
Isn't it?
No, I mean bigger than a cat, like a Kira style, like if you glued a whole bunch of cats together,
yeah,
like that kind of,
exactly.
which reminds me of slime molds.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
No, slime molds, totally, go for it.
Slime molds being a Physarum polycephalum,
nice.
and these are single-celled organisms. It's almost like I've talked about slime molds before in front of, say, 170 children this one time, but that's a story for another time. Julian Robert over at Stuff to Blow Your Mind have a really cool podcast episode about this. But in brief, these are single-celled, brainless amoeba that form these colonies, these moving, thinking colonies that divert resources to policing to get bacteria out of there. That will, you know, if they run out of food in the immediate area, they will form a little slug-like creature and move to another location.
They also spread out very long tendrils to discover where food might be. And if they encounter evidence of a pathway that they've already crossed, then instead of expelling expending more energy in order to trace that same path again, it won't.
Yeah, they have spatial
memory. And
yet
there's no brain there.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like lolcats.
Lolcats, I don't know that we can say they don't have a brain. The interesting thing to me is that one, you had this original kind of, whatever the original idea was of the cute kitty cat picture with the funny caption going on the internet and people thinking it was amusing and then sharing it. Then someone said, oh, I should, this would be really funny if I changed the caption to this. And then they go in and they change the caption so it says something else and then they share it. And then someone else says, oh, wait, what if I took a picture of a totally different cat and either put the same caption on or a new caption on? And it took such a life that now everyone knows what lolcats are. That if you say lolcats, everyone who is on the internet for any length of time is going to be able to think of an example that meets that word. Mm-hmm. And what's really fun
nobody ever told them how to make one.
Right.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's emergent behavior in that sense. But we see this in lots of different ways on the internet. And the whole point about the social networking episode was that this is something that's happening right now with the way we use social networks, and that we can't predict how that's going to play a part in our lives in the future. We just know it'll be a big part.
Right. I mean, this is one of the things that makes the future of the internet so exciting, is because there are nodes everywhere. There's no top-down control.
Right.
Nobody's in charge of the internet, and the internet itself and the web are emergent.
Right.
In a way, I mean, they are themselves examples of emergence that are full of smaller examples of emergence. One great thing that I don't think I ever would have predicted, but in retrospect it seems so obvious, is the emergence of wikis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, put me in 1970 and say I'm working on ARPANET and, you know, we're predicting something like the web. How could I possibly have imagined wikis? I mean, it seems so obvious now, like I said, but
right.
Well, but these are emergent behaviors because they're created by users. Nobody's really in charge, or I guess you can have some editors, but that depends on each one. You mm-hmm. know, they're perfectly emergent,
right? And they do have their own sets of rules. In the sense mm-hmm. of wikis, it may be in whatever the rules of what's permissible to post. It may be, or it may just be even more simple than that. It may just be the actual mechanics of the wiki itself. And that, you know, the complexity arises as more and more people join and contribute and consume this. What I think is interesting is that with the internet, it's even more difficult to predict any sort of emergent behaviors than it would be in other systems. Because in other systems, presumably, you would be able to at least determine what the basic rules are for each individual element that's in that system, right? Now, we've already established that just because you even know all the rules, you can't really know what the complexity will be of the overall system, because the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Right. And you also on the internet have a little bit of doubt about who the actual participants are going to be, because it's such a huge complex system that, you know, it's not like a flock of birds where you say, oh, well, there's 15 birds, got it.
Well, and there's not the established rules. Like,
right.
We don't have a set of rules that everyone follows. There are rules within different groups that are on the internet that follow, you know, they're mostly, you know, things that are, they may not even be vocalized or written down in any way, but people just come to understand, oh, you don't do such and such, even though that's not stated in a rule anywhere. That's just, it's kind of bad protocol, or it's bad form. For example, like I see this in communities all the time, where someone will post something completely innocently, or at least seemingly innocently, and then the response immediately comes back saying, no, you don't do that here.
That's not okay.
Right. Even though that's not explicitly said anywhere, this sort of has evolved over time as the system has become more complex, knowing that this is not something that we want happening here. It happens all the time in games in particular. But we don't have an actual coda for rules of the internet. I mean, there are a lot of joke ones.
Don't feed the trolls.
We probably should not discuss here.
Don't feed the trolls. Well, you know, there's
lots of them are not appropriate.
But there you see them often in groups that are, for better or worse, the people who often think of themselves as owners of the internet. Like 4chan and Anonymous are two good examples. They have their own sets of rules, most of which are jokes. Not all of which are, but most of them are. And in a way, the rules themselves have become a meme. And the whole idea is it's fun to continuously add and tweak and change them. Usually it's just adding. A lot of them don't like it when you change one of the rules, and they pay a lot of attention to that. But you know, they're not particularly they're not the rules
you
that
sound
anyone
as
follows.
If you're speaking from experience. Are you one who has tried to nail some precepts to the door of
no,
the Anonymous Cathedral?
Not so much that, but I've seen what happens if someone posts like the rules to the internet, but they either didn't copy and paste it, or they copied it from some place that had the rules quote unquote wrong. And then I've seen what the...
Oh, you're serious.
Wow. Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. No, I write about this stuff, and I blog about it, and I podcast about it. So I've been in these communities. I feel like a sociologist who's hung out with the Hell's Angels or something. But I've been in these
Internet's
communities.
In the mist. Lolcats in the mist.
Right.
There you go. That's a better joke.
But they definitely take their largely unspoken rules very seriously. Or maybe it's not seriously at all, and that's the problem. I mean, it's kind of hard to say. They certainly react with enthusiasm if you were to break one of their rules.
Well, here's something I'm interested in asking. What are some of the most interesting emergent behaviors you've observed on the internet in social networking?
Well, I mean,
I can start off with one of my own. But
sure, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think one of the most interesting things is... again, the unpredictable way that especially Twitter, but social media in general, has been used to spread news and information,
mm-hmm.
Like breaking news or like when there's a disaster.
Sure, when things break on Twitter before the news stations pick them up.
Yeah, and it's so interesting to watch the way that the message proceeds through the Twitter sphere, say. And the way I think it's really interesting is that so it's not just I would say it is emergent because it's not just a straightforward passing along of information like copy paste, pass it along. I mean, that would be fairly predictable.
Mm.
What it tends to be, I think, is that there is some of that, but then there's also a lot of passing of information by way of commentary on the information. And then there's a kind of cannibalistic message creation where the new message that's being shared becomes mainly the commentary from
about,
Twitter on
right.
the original piece of information.
Yeah, I will frequently – I mean, because you know, I check into Twitter maybe once every 20 to 30 minutes, mm-hmm. which sounds – really a lot now that I say that out loud.
Not at all.
That's great. But you know, so I'll check in and I'll suddenly see half of my Twitter feed exploding about something, and it'll be, yeah, all of this oblique commentary or snarky commentary more likely about mm-hmm. some other thing that's happened, and I go and Google whatever the keyword is to figure out what the actual news story is, because mm-hmm. from those initial posts I'm like, well, people are upset.
But
it must be a Tuesday.
Yeah, it's like the story becomes the conversation about the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what the story is.
Well, that became really evident during the Arab Spring. I mean, that was the story. Was how social media allowed people to have a channel of communication not only to each other but to the rest of the world during what would normally be an event where. Unless you had embedded journalists inside the country, the rest of the world might not be aware of what was going on. And even then, it would only be the world that's paying attention to a particular outlet. I was going to say, since you asked the question and you wanted to know what kind of emergent behaviors you found interesting, I find viral videos fascinating. And the reason why I find it fascinating is that the things that make a video go viral, essentially it's just that a lot of people share it, right? But sharing does not mean that the video was of a particular quality or that it had a particular kind of humor to it or subject matter. It's completely independent of all that.
There's no formula for making a viral video.
Right. You can try and, you know, hit into the zeitgeist, but that hardly ever works.
It's funny to watch people in marketing, like, try to create viral videos.
It's... both funny and tragic, like when a clown dies. But yeah, it's like, you know, when you have 72 hours or more of video uploaded every minute on YouTube, how is it that some videos get worldwide acceptance or being shared like crazy, and other videos that might be quote unquote better don't? For example, if you had seen Gangnam Style before it exploded, if you were one mm-hmm. of the first people who watched it when it was uploaded, you might think, oh, that's kind of entertaining.
That's cute.
But there are 1,000 other videos from Asia that are equally weird and tongue in cheek and catchy, and because it really was. It was made to be this sort of cheeky, uh-huh. goofy, silly song. But there are lots of songs in that particular kind of genre that are coming out of, well, not just Asia, but all parts
but
of the
everywhere,
world.
Yeah.
I like watching cranky old people get mad because they can't understand it.
But see, to me, it's not that I don't understand it so much as I don't understand why that one got shared versus all the millions of others. See, that's the thing that's fascinating to me. That's what I find fascinating about viral videos, is that you can't predict which one is going to go viral.
Flocking.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where someone saw it, they shared it, all the people or a significant number of people who saw it from the person who shared it then went on to share it, and then it just exploded. I didn't see that video until it was probably right at when it was peaking, or maybe just before it peaked. It was definitely before the radio started playing it. But but that was, to me, that was interesting. I watched and I thought, it's entertaining. It's a funny video. I don't have any criticism against it. It's just interesting to me that that one goes viral. Like, there's some, when you watch it go viral, you can sort of figure out why, because there's also this amazing sense of Schadenfreude across the internet. So, for example, Rebecca Black's Friday video.
Right.
Oh,
because
no.
a lot of that yeah. was people poking fun at this young girl who she wanted to make a music video. That was her birthday present. And, like, if I were 13 and I were living in this world now, that might be what I want to do, too. I'd be like, that would be awesome. She was, you know, and she, I think, handled it way better than I ever would have, considering the reaction to that video and how it went viral. I mean, when Stephen Colbert shows up on Jimmy Fallon and is singing your song, that's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But at any rate, like that, when you see a video like that, you think, all right, I can see the elements here that would make this go viral in sort of
a snarky,
nasty, mean-spirited way, but
I have an interesting question.
Sure.
Have you ever been unknowingly caught in the crest of a viral video wave? Meaning, like, did you share a video thinking it was something obscure, not realizing that it was in the process of blowing up? Or do you know what I mean?
I definitely...
Have you been that unconscious person with it, you know, having no idea that you're contributing to a mass phenomenon?
I've definitely shared stuff where I thought it was really interesting and I thought other people would like to see it without realizing how big it was going to get later. That has happened.
Yeah.
But more frequently than not, I'm actually on the other end of the crest. Like, it's very
late to the game.
I'm usually late to the game too.
I am too, but it's been weird the few times where it's like, you know, maybe I saw some YouTube video, I was like, oh, this is funny, and I share it, and then, like, in a day or two, like, everybody has seen it.
Huge,
and I didn't realize, like, oh, I was part of the wave that brought this out.
Yeah, you know? I think the last one that I remember doing that with was Carmen's Look at Me Now video, the cover of the Chris Brown song sung by the cute little rockabilly chick and her adorable Jewish fiance.
I don't think I know that.
I've never seen
that one.
Is it great?
It's adorable.
Okay.
It is so cool.
Well, I think
I'll watch it after this.
The last one for me was Walk Off the Earth's cover of Someone I Used to Know, the Got Ye song.
Right.
Because that was the five people playing the one guitar.
Uh-huh.
Which, when I saw it, and I saw it right when they uploaded it, because I had heard of Walk Off the Earth already, and I when I saw that, I just thought, how creative to have this be your music video, with five people playing one guitar all at the same time and singing this song. And I shared it, and then shortly thereafter, I don't claim credit. I was just part of that early group, and then it exploded.
You couldn't claim credit.
No, there's no way
unless you made it, maybe, or like it.
Well, I mean, if you are who's to say who's the person who was the domino that caused all the other ones to fall?
Right, but probably most of those dominoes don't know who that person is.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't know. Not really. I mean, unless you're just one of those people who has millions of followers and there was like no one had heard of whatever the meme
sure,
was before.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. When someone like George Takei or Will Wheaton or, you know, these other gods of our internets step up and reblog something.
I'm just waiting
for
them to rename Facebook George Takei Book, because that's what mine has turned into.
It's true. Yes.
Yeah. It's my favorite is always, and this is a little bit get off my lawn of me, but you know, when George Takei posts something that I saw like 4 years ago on the internet, and then all of my friends start reposting it, and I'm like, they never saw that thing?
Yeah.
Were they not on?
Well,
the
see,
internet?
Lauren, if you had shared it, then the meme would have already run its course. But really, we're blaming you.
When did
me
we
personally.
Veer off into such weird territory? We're sitting
emergent
here talking
behavior.
About, yeah,
emergent behavior.
Talking about the
it
mechanics.
Is.
There's some emergent
and then
behavior.
When you like the video,
that's the mechanics of going right. Viral.
No,
it is,
no,
it is.
I believe you. Yeah,
absolutely,
you're right.
Well, that wraps up this discussion about emergence. I hope you guys found it interesting. If you have any topics you would like to have us address in future episodes of Forward Thinking, I highly recommend you get in touch with us, because that way we know about it. You can email us. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com, or drop us a line on our social media. You can find us fwthinking. That's on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Go to fwthinking.com to check out the blogs, watch the videos, listen to other episodes of the podcast, and you can also interact with us there. We really look forward to it and having you be part of this conversation about the future and how amazing it's going to be. We'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.